Hi everyone, my name's Louise, I'm an addict. I've spoken at this meeting a couple of times now, a few times, and I think I spoke at what was the second meeting when this meeting first started, and there was maybe, 30 people there, about that sort of number, and it's just amazing to see the number of people that there are here tonight and how this meeting's grown, and people who have put such hard work into that have got reason to be really proud of what they've done here. I think it's made a significant difference to the fellowship in London, this meeting, and I'm very proud to have been kind of a member of the group from the very beginning. So I've done the 15-minute chair, and I've done the 40-minute one as well, and I'm like, we have a conscience now that you've got to be over 10 years clean to do the 40-minute one, so I've like been relegated to do the short one now. And actually, Michael was saying to me earlier on, he says, do you want to swap? And I was like, actually, I wouldn't mind swapping, because the 40-minute one, you've got room to kind of fuck up a few minutes, do you know what I mean? You can kind of waffle a bit, and I'm a sort of speaker, when I start, I kind of digress. I like to digress, and some of my best bits are when I digress. But when you've only got 15 minutes, you don't really have any scope for kind of waffling. And so I did think that perhaps we could maybe do a series kind of arrangement, and I could do 15 minutes over the next 3 weeks, and we could cover things in that way, you know. Because I've got a very long story, a very kind of... complicated. We've all got complicated stories, but I've got some consequences which just one of them would take me. It would take me 15 minutes to explain to you how it was that my children come to be adopted. It would take me 15 minutes to explain to you when I broke my back and both my arms, and how I've had to recover from that and all the consequences from that. And so I thought what I'd do was just kind of keep to the basics. I don't have time to go into those sort of big kind of stories about myself. But I also find sometimes that I worry that they might alienate people. If you're new to any, you're very welcome. I will talk a bit about how what I was like when I used drugs. You don't need to have been like me to qualify to be a member of any. I was a very extreme drug user with some extreme consequences. Now it turns out that's actually quite useful for me in the way that I'm now able to help people who've got similar consequences, but you don't need to have had them in order to qualify to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You just need to have a desire to stop using. That's it. Doesn't matter what it is. I just don't want people to think, oh fucking hell, well I never did that, and I've never been in prison, and I've never done that, so you know, I don't belong here. Might have had the penny drop a little earlier than I did. You know, there's a guy here last week, I was talking, I don't know if he's here, I don't see him here, and he's got a son who's 17 in recovery. Fucking great, imagine, 17 years old, your whole life in front of you, and you've got enough information at that point to recover. I just think, that's just amazing that happens now. There's very few people that's happened for. And I kind of wonder if I'd had that sort of information at that sort of age, if I would have got well at that sort of age. And I don't know, I think I might have done. I went into treatment the first time, well, the only time actually, when I was 18, which is over 20 years ago. And in those days, treatment centres were very different from what they are now, I believe, from the stories that I hear. But I don't think they get you to dig holes in the garden and then make you fill them in again in order to get you in touch with your anger anymore. I don't think they do that anymore. I'm not sure if people climb out the windows in the middle of the night to escape, even though the front door's open. Maybe they still do that, I'm not sure. But it was. But listen, I went there when I was 18. My parents were horrified at what I was doing up in Scotland, and whisked me off to this treatment centre in the hope that somebody would find out what was wrong with me and do something about it. And I was a sort of kid, a very miserable, lonely child, and was kind of badly fucked about by my older brother, and really, quite frankly, if the circus had come to town, I would have run away with them, you know. I just wanted somewhere to belong, and I found that even though this place was quite scary, it was also quite seductive, and an atmosphere of 30 people in a house in the middle of the country. And so I stayed there, and I did get clean there. Unfortunately, when we were there for 6 months, they told us that now we were fine and it was okay for us to start drinking. And so we did, and you can imagine what happened after that. So I'm not one of those people who has got lots of experience in stopping and then start again, and stopping then starting. I kind of start and then I don't stop again. And what I do is vary drug, or say, well, if I just get a script, then I'll be all right. Or if I just drink and smoke a bit of weed, then that's the solution. Or if I just didn't have a habit, then that's the solution. Or if I just got pills instead of fucking methadone, then that's the solution, you know. But I've never really gone through many phases of being clean. I had that 6 months when I was 18, and then the next time was about 10 years ago. I was clean for 5 years then. That was my first experience in NA. And I guess, you know, since I've come to NA, I'm a completely different person now. I'm a completely different person. I have, I don't know anywhere else where you can take people and they become kind people, and take somebody and make them kind. Where else would you do that? But I have become a kind and decent person, and that is a completely different person to the one I was when I was using. And I'll give you one example of the sort of person I was when I was using, just to illustrate to you how totally different I am now. When I was homeless in the last bout of my using, the last sort of 4 or 5 years of it, and I was a good little earner, me. I could make money, and what I used to do was I'd sort of sleep in people's floors or in their spare room and give them a bit of gear to let me be there, and they would get a bit of gear every day, and I would be able to go and use my drugs, and that was all fine. And I spent a few months living with this guy in Kennington, and I used to come home, and he was a crack. An alcoholic of the crack smoking variety, right? And he would, I bring him a few cans, and I'd give him a couple of stones, and I would come in, and I'd have my gear, and I'd have a bit of crack as well, and we'd sit and we'd use, and we'd just talk shite all night and put the world to rights, and then I'd get up again and do it the next day, right? And then one night he died, right? And I'd been out, and I came in, and he was lying on the floor, and he'd fallen asleep in front of the telly. I thought he was just asleep in front of the telly. And then I thought, fuck, you haven't moved for ages, right? I'm sitting, and he's on the floor, he's dead, right? And I'm smoking on the floor, you haven't fucking moved for ages. I look at him, and I kind of kick him with my foot. Oi, oi! And no movement, and I think this isn't right. I just doesn't right. And I get up and give him a shake, and he was cold. He was going cold. And I thought, I like this guy. You know, it wasn't like he was one of them people you're using with that you couldn't stand. I liked him. He was all right, and he was dead as fucking Hector. He was dead. And it entered my head to phone an ambulance or the police, but it immediately left my head because it was about 9 o'clock at night, and if I did that, then the police would come, and how would I be able to use my gear then if the police came? And so it was a consideration that entered my head and went straight out without even stopping there for more than a couple of seconds. It was just not possible. And I did think, well, it doesn't make any difference to him, does it really? He's dead, you know? That was my justification. And the next day I got up in the morning and phone his family, phone a doctor, phone the police and all that, and they came around and sorted it out, and I went off to work, as he used to call it, off thieving, as it actually was. And that's the sort of person I am when I'm using, right? Nothing gets in between me and my drugs, right? And I can't think of a better example of that kind of being driven to use than that. And it's just so not who I am when I'm not using. It's just, I've become a completely different person through working this programme, through the help of people that I've had in NA. You know, when I first went to meetings, I heard the word God and a door closed in my head, and I thought, well, that isn't going to work for me. It's not, you know, I'm not going to become religious. You know, far too cool for that. I didn't go into treatment when I got clean. I was on remand in prison and decided that I would try getting clean again and come back to NA and see what was what. And, you know, from when I first went to meetings again, people just looked after me, you know. And you hear a lot of people who, I don't know, you go around meetings and hear people sharing, saying, oh, that they're in so much pain and everything's so difficult and life's so hard. And that's not my experience. My life got better straight away, I swear to God. I came out of prison, I had no warrants, right? And I didn't have a habit. My life was better immediately. I could walk down the street and nobody could nick me because I wasn't committing any crimes. And just the relief of that was, I just can't tell you what a difference that was from one day just to not have that. I started sleeping, it took a few months, but I did eventually, that was all I wanted when I first got out of prison, was a night's sleep, just a night's sleep. And I started sleeping, put on a bit of weight, went to the dentist. I was in a bail hostel on a curfew for the first 6 months. People used to run me back from meetings so I could get back in time for my curfew and that. People really looked after me. And, you know, I do a bit of service and committees and stuff, and they can be really difficult places and where they bring out the fucking worst in me. I swear to God, I know everything and how everybody should be doing everything, and we all struggle with each other and take ourselves far too seriously. And you kind of forget the love that there is in this fellowship and what it is that we actually do for each other. You know, we're in the business of saving lives here, and you saved my life because I was fucking dying. I swear to God, I was dying. And, I kind of... Not everything in my life has turned around overnight. I'm sort of coming up to 3 years clean and, you know, not everything is resolved. I still live in hostels. I've tried to have contact with my mother, who, God love her, and who can blame her, still won't speak to me. My children are still adopted and always will be. I'm in the middle of it, just about to finish a degree, and I'm in a great deal of flux about what I'm going to do after that, and if I'm not, anybody's ever actually going to give me a job, and how I'm going to become a kind of settled, productive member of society. You know, none of that's settled for me yet. But in saying that, I've had the best time the last 3 years. I've got some people around me that love me and would drop anything for me, as I would for them. And I don't, I haven't been miserable. And, I'm clean by the grace of God and nothing else. You know, I do spend a lot of time, I am frightened of stuff, you know. That's one of the things that being in NA has given me, is to be frightened and to do stuff anyway. It frightens me that I don't know if I'm ever going to get a job. It frightens me that I'm going to be living in a fucking hostel forever. It frightens me that I may never see my mother again. It frightens me on the one hand that I may never see my children again. It frightens me on the other hand that I might see them again, you know. But, and yet we do it anyway and we go through it anyway, and I've got the ability to do that through being here. And I'll just finish on this. somebody said to me about putting footwork in and that, and just kind of that step three thing of putting in the work and leaving the results up to God. And I'm kind of in a lot of that at the minute with my degree and jobs and my children and my family and that. You just do the next right thing and leave the results up to God. And somebody told me this story a while ago about it's kind of a quotation from Zorba the Greek about a guy who was a young guy who saw an old man, a really ancient man with a rickety cane and back sore, out and planting a tree. And the young guy says to him, "Why are you bothering to plant that tree? You will not see it grow. What's the point in that? You should live each day as if it was your last." And he said, "On the contrary, you should live as if you're never going to die." And that's kind of, I like that kind of way of thinking, because that's about thinking about what you can put into the world instead of what you can get out of it. And I think that, in a general sense, is what the 12 steps give us, is that ability to put in and let go, and the beauty in that is that through in doing that we receive. That's certainly been my experience. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.